Good morning. Good morning, dear listeners. Welcome to the special edition of Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And we are greeting you from your number one talk radio station, that is Sigil FM. And it's the 5th of January, 2026. And it's 5 minutes past the hour of six. And you are listening to Early Morning Scoop. And it's that time of the early week. Time of the beginning of the week and also the beginning of the year that we look ahead. We look on issues of global affairs, issues of economic development, and issues that affect our bread and butter. And before we go there, we like starting with morning motivation to say, whenever you are waking up, you must be able to remember, that it's one of the beautiful quotes that somebody have told me. And indicated to say, until you are dead, all the defeats are psychological. Until your final breath, all your defeats are psychological. Because there is always a comeback. There is always a comeback that people don't speak about. And there is no beautiful story than a story that is a building from failure, a building from defeat, a comeback, the most celebrated victory in any sport, in any event is a win from a comeback, from defeat, winning a trophy after being 2 goals down. And that is exactly what we need to be able to do, especially at the current point in time, whatever we are, you know, going through, either is economically, socially, personal-wise, there is always a comeback. That's why it's an indication to say, until your last breath, all the defeats are not real defeats. They are just psychological. They are just in your mind because there is a comeback. Yeah, and the other thing is always very important to make sure that we stick to our goals, because January is a time that many people, they are writing their New Year resolutions. They are writing their beautiful plans. They are good drafters. And you must be able also to understand that the more we criticize our policymakers for them being very good at drafting their policies and not implementing, we must also look at ourselves to say, am I also good at drafting my own New Year resolutions? But when I look back at them, I'm not being able to implement them. What would be some of the challenges there? And that can only be able to assist you also to look at the bigger picture too, to say, man, I need to make sure that when it comes to my New Year resolutions, when it comes to my plans, I must also stick to them before I complain about our policymakers not implementing those policies. They are good at drafting their plans. And we speak about all these things of organizational plans getting dust in the shelves, operational plans getting dust in the shelves, money going back. But are you also sticking to what you said you were going to say? There are people who, up to now, you still have a resolution that you made in 2020, but that you are not even achieving 60% of that. We need to look at that before we look at the bigger picture too, to say it start with me, before I start, you know, criticizing other people. Do to yourself what you want others to do to you. Then we look at the bigger picture and, what need to be done. Yeah. You know, January has started not really at a good note. Started with some of very shocking events, either is in Namibia, either is at the global platform, and all these events which are happening, you know, they will be able to affect the issues of bread and butter. And also to say, how can we come back from, you know, some of the shocking events which have happened? When you look at, what have happened before we go to, international fora, especially in Namibia. When you look at, when you look at what have happened, especially within Odonga Traditional Authority. Some unfortunate events which have happened, which led to the shootout and the death of the headman of Nelawa village the late Sam Nepando, and also the shooting that led to the the serious injury that happened to the headman of Ikokola village, that is Iben Nashandi, who was also happened to be the ED of National Planning Commission. It's one of the unfortunate and shocking events, particularly which also a call out to the protection of our traditional authority and protection also of all courts, because what has been happening in Namibia, especially not only in the traditional authority setting, but also attacking of prosecutors. And something that need to be looked at, because if you attack the court that is the custodian of justice, then it's going to be very difficult. It's going to be very difficult if those who are in charge of making decisions on behalf of the people are intimidated or their lives are under threat, then the state is not going to be in order. That's why it's quite very important for those who are in charge of, you know, interpreting the law and also giving justice to the people to be protected. And maybe it's now the high time too to make sure that the Minister of Justice and also the Minister of Urban and Rural Development to make sure that protection must be given, especially during dispute, the same way we prioritize and give protection to the magistrate during the court proceedings should be also applied also when it's coming to traditional authority. Because if you attack the court, then it's an attack to the judicial system. It's also an attack to the justice. And it's also an attack to the people too. And also peace of the country, because we must prioritize and also respect those who are, you know, giving their time to make sure that justice is given. And must be able to remember with the basic understanding of law, must be able to remember that once you attack a magistrate, once you attack a prosecutor, once you attack a traditional authority, a leader who's in charge of a traditional court, it's going to be very difficult for you to come out of jail, because even the student of law, they understand that representing somebody, for example, who killed a magistrate, is a career suicide. That's why it's one of the worst crime that people do not really know to say that is the court, and it's an attack to the constitution too. That's why you must really be careful. That's why even if you meet the prosecutor that you are not happy with his representation during a certain court proceeding, don't attempt even to insult him or to touch him, because even those who are going to represent you, they are going to be very careful, because defending somebody who is attacking the court, which is at the same time that which is interpreting the law, and it's a career suicide to most of the legal representative, and it's also for those who end up in that situation. You must be able to be really careful and try to make sure that when it comes to the respecting of the law and also protecting our people, then, you know, you must be able to respect those institutions wherever they are. So apart from that, there is one of the events which happened at the global platform. The global platform, particularly, looking at what have happened in Venezuela, when you know, the president of Venezuela, the weekend, was captured by the law enforcement of United States of America. And one of the things which have shocked the world, and one of the things which have got attention of the world, either is global leaders, church leaders. Speaking about President Nicolas Maduro, was captured after an airstrike in Venezuela by law enforcement agency, the military, and also the intelligence of the United States of America, which happened to capture the president of Venezuela from his own country. And there's also a question of international law, to say, when it's coming to international law, where are we standing? Where are we standing? What is the strength of United Nations? Is Venezuela going to be another case study of Iraq? Or is it going to be another case study of Afghanistan? Or is it going to be another case study of Libya? Or this situation will be handled differently? And what law is going to be used when it comes to interpretation of what has happened? And in a very short period of time, I will be also joined by international relations analysts, because there are those who have expertise in conflict and dispute resolution, and also those who have expertise in international affairs, to look into this case study and to say, is it really what is said to be said? And also the question of looking at the security of presidency, to say, how come it's only took the American agency 2 hours to capture a president of the country? What is the security of that? Was it an inside job? Or are the presidents of countries well protected? Or how sophisticated is also American military apparatus? But it's also a question of also saying, yes, international institutions must do their part, but where we are coming, you must also be able to protect yourself, to say what level of security was put out there. Because I'm seeing a lot of analysts are also questioning, to say why it was so easy, why it looked so easy, because it took the U.S. Military around 10 to 11 years to kill Osama bin Laden, and billions of dollars had been spent there. But bin Laden was not even a president of a country, but just a head of an organization, Al-Qaeda. And even the case of Iraq, it took around months before, almost a year before capturing of Saddam Hussein. But when it's coming to the president of Venezuela, what really happened there? Was he betrayed? How can somebody just come and airlift the president? It's not a leader of Qatar, it's a head of state with state machinery. But just 2 hours, you are airlifted. And it's also a matter of maybe a lesson to be learned, to say security, protecting citizen number one, must be a priority. And maybe also a question of saying, when it comes to countries with resources, let us invest in our innovation and also our security too. To say, if you just buy weapons, buy security system, buy a defense system, but you are not inventing, that who you are going to buy from when he's coming to attack you, he knows where to jam your their things, because it's them who made them. Make sure that you also invest in your own system, in your own security. But that is the content that we are going to go into. And also to look at the economic part of it. The economic part of it, is it what you say is happening, or there is an economic part which is involved? Because when you look at Venezuela, it's not only any other country in Latin America. It's not only any other country. But when you look at Venezuela, you'll be able to realize and understand that It's one of the countries which is highest producers of oil. And this prediction to say Venezuela produce approximately 303 billion barrels of oil, or it has 303 billion barrels of oil reserves, and that is about 18.17% of the world total oil reserves. And there's a lot of interpretation out there to say there is an economic part of it, and to say person cannot just attack any other country, but you must be able to have some economic significance, and also to look at also the trends and history of what have happened, but it's also to look at what will happen moving forward. But we'll definitely come back to that conversation, especially when I'm going to be joined by our guests, which are from that background of geopolitics and international relations, and to interpret that situation. And you know, the news of migration continue to be one of the bad news in our continent of Africa. To say whatever have been happening, records have been stated to say thousands of people, they are traveling outside Africa, and thousands every year they are dying throughout those roads that they are taking to EU, to United Arab Emirates, or to the Middle East, especially looking for survival. And on the other news, it was stated that dozens of missing people after a boat carrying over 200 migrants went missing. And also indicated that around 102 survivors had been rescued after, you know, a boat carrying 200 migrants, lost its control. And that is in the coast of the Gambia on New Year Eve. And it's also stated that the National Emergency Response Plan has been activated, and the government has deployed adequate resources to intensify effort to provide assistance to these survivors. And looking at this aspect, it's also indicated that thousands of African people are desperate for a better opportunity in Europe, and take that risk by leaving, their villages and travel on boats along the Atlantic coast, and one of the world's deadliest migrant routes. And you're also asking yourself a question to say, when people are dying in thousands, but still people are moving in thousands too through those boats leaving Africa, and they are desperate to find jobs in Europe. And every year, every month, there is a boat which is sinking. It's a boat which is sinking. And you're always asking yourself to say, why can't we create opportunity here at home? And is that really the only way to find better opportunities? And maybe if you have to be a bit provocative and ask a question to say, are all Namibians who are abroad living their best lives? At what percentage are all Namibians who are abroad living their best lives? Are they really living their best lives that we are seeing on social media? Or they are suffering daily? Or they want to come back? What can we do to make sure that those who have ability to do the work can be able to do the work here, at home. And it already stated, on records to say more than 3,000 people died trying to reach Spain by the sea. That is just in 2025. And, it is only about those who died trying to reach, you know, Spain. What about other, countries in, Europe? And also, what about also those who die of, other diseases on arrival? Because when you reach there, you are an illegal immigrant. You don't have papers. You don't have, medical care. And, you also find yourself in a very, dangerous situation. And what can be done to make sure that, when it comes to moving forward in, when it's coming to moving forward, opportunities created here at home. While you are running away from home, international corporations are running from that side to come here to look also for opportunities, and you just do not understand what is really happening. Namibians are running away from the country, looking for opportunity in the European Union, where European business persons, they can't wait to catch the next flight to get to Namibia, so that they can prioritize their deals when it's coming to oil and gas and other opportunities, even the mining sector. But as we are running on the other side, and at the end of the day, who is going to win? Is that also coming directly to resources, or is that who is just looking at opportunity on social media and also run to the other country? It's a question that we should ask with a critical care, because, you know, it's really need to be addressed, because it's part of economic conversation to say, why can't we get our hands in opportunities that are connected to abundance of resources that we have, instead of us going there and become nanny, which is really not what we deserve at this point in time. Why should I be a voluntary slave in a foreign country? Why I can make opportunities here in Namibia? And what is that that authorities and also those who have power to manage resources of the country are doing to make sure that the daughters and sons of this soil are not going to leave the country because they are hungry? But at least if they leave the country, they must go seek other advanced training so that they come back at home. But you find people who are saying, me, I'm not coming back to Namibia, I'm not coming back anyway, because it's better to be here as a security guard in Manchester City than suffering at the village. But really, poverty and inequality in Africa should be addressed as a matter of agency, because if situation continue to be like this, we end up having a very unfortunate scenario that cannot be handled, to where your young and energetic generation is not within the continent, and the continent will move 5 steps backwards again, which will really be an unfortunate situation. So let us look at the commercial break, then we continue.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite okoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendife nawa.
The festive season is a time for traveling, a time to reunite and celebrate with loved ones. But most importantly, it's a time to obey the road rules. Check your tires, wear your seatbelt, drive sober, adhere to speed limits, and walk responsibly. Do the right thing and save lives this festive season. Your family awaits.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
Ngejefa omarude dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oije mwili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora zatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa hora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma felane Eagle FM the eye
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of
the views
staff.
And opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any
of
staff.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Yeah, we are continuing with Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe, and we are here until the hour of... 7:30, and looking on the other news, it was stated that at least 30 people killed in market attack in Nigeria, Niger State. And looking at the Niger State in Nigeria, it's one of the regions, the states within Nigeria, where conflicts have been at the order of the day. Especially in the past 6 months, and just at an open market, 30 people have been killed, and it's deadly. It's deadly. Even the shootouts in the US or many other countries which happen, gunmen killing 30 people, it's quite a deadly, gunmen killing 30 people, it's quite a deadly attack in Nigeria, in Niger State. It was stated that 30 people have been killed and several others abducted after gunmen attacked an open market in Nigeria, according to the police. And the attackers stormed Kasuana Daji Market, Demo Village, that is in the weekend, and setting some stalls on fire, and looting food. And according to the authorities, stated that these are locally known gunmen as bandits, and they arrived on motorcycles and opened fire indiscriminately. And the witness are indicating that the scene is described as panic. And it's deadly. And the same situation, to say women and children were not spared, and the bodies have been recovered hours after an attack, and several people have been abducted. It's quite a very deadly situation. and to say how is the security of Nigeria going to be handled. And this just happened after more than 300 school children and staff were abducted in the same state. And must be able to understand that Nigeria is it is a state like us having regions, and Nigeria is a federal government. It's fragmented into states. You have various states. There's Ogun State, Niger State, and many other states. But you'll be able to remember that it's within Niger State that 300 school children, staff members were also abducted. And you're also asking yourself a question to say, how is the security, is the Nigerian government going to handle this situation, especially it's coming to deteriorating security situation in Nigeria, especially when it comes to human security. It's coming to human security because at the end of the day, those with guns, those with military and police training will be able to protect and defend themselves. But an ordinary citizen is the one who is suffering, particularly women and children. Men will be able to run, but a mother at an open market with two children and selling her goods will first look at the first-year-old, the six-month-year-old, before she start vacating the place. But the men, as I indicated, even during war, a man will just pick up his briefcase, jump through the window, while a woman has to look for the belongings and also look for the child who is crying under the bed. And also, by the time she ran away, the terrorist or the gunmen have already arrived. That's why protection of women and children, particularly during a deadly crisis, should be priority number one. During war, during drought, and during a state of emergency. Because men just pick up the pocket, the wallet, and or the cell phone and the wallet, then jump through the window and go save his life. But in most cases, it's women and children who become the casualty of unfortunate, deadly situation. And it's a matter of also asking a question to say, Nigeria is one of the most influential state within ECOWAS, and has also been central, particularly speaking out against you know, some of terrorist attacks within the region, coup within the region. But when it comes to at home, it seems like that the Bola Tinubu is also finding it very difficult, although there have been praise of efforts of rescuing and retaining those who were captured. Seems like the situation is not coming to an end yet. And remember that there was a time that United States of America and Donald Trump indicated to say, you know, we're going to intervene. And Trump was saying he's going to send his marine there, to send one of the highly specialized military units in the American the military to come and protect, you know, the Christians within Nigeria, where it has caused, you know, a lot of, you know, backlash, especially from African leaders and also international players. So you cannot intervene within a sovereign state. But one also may be able to ask to say, is a sovereign state able to protect itself? And what can it do if it's not able to protect itself? Does it need to ask for assistance within the African Union or from external support? And remember the other time, not long ago, in December, President Emmanuel Macron and also President Tinubu. They got into agreement, especially security cooperations when it's coming to fighting of terrorism and giving technical know-how, especially in protecting of the citizen. Now, you know, some of these things, they become quite complicated, particularly when you look at the long-term impact on cooperation, the long-term impact of security assistance, because since 1970s, you know, African countries have been in cooperation with former colonizers, especially in area of economic development, in area of cooperations in terms of security. But it seems like situation is not coming to an end. We want to remember that you look at countries, especially the Sahel Alliance. They decided to say no, military cooperation, military agreement with France, they come to an end. But looking at other countries in Africa, they are still entering into those cooperation, especially looking at the desperate situation to protect your people. You can also see that African leaders may have good intentions, but the foreign leaders really have intention of long-term solution for Africa, or African conflict is an opportunity for them to enter into those agreements, or it's an opportunity also to pursue their foreign policy interest. Something that need to be looked at, and also to ask to say why conflict is not ending in Africa, especially those with wealthy of resources. Is there a third force behind that, or is just a situation out there? Yeah, it's 42 minutes past the hour of 6. And as I indicated, I'll be joined by our guest from 7 there, especially looking at the situation of, you know, Venezuela, and also to look at long-term solutions, and also to look at what is the strength of, you know, institutions, international, multilateral institutions that our leaders go to every year. They go to UNGA. For the past 8 years of the existence of United Nations, there have been complaints. Either is United Nations Security Council reform, either is the strength of UN when it comes to dealing with aggressor nations. And our leaders every year, and they have a trip to UN to speak at an international platform, which is quite a very important platform. The Secretary General, particularly the current SG of UN, Antonio Guterres, has been speaking about no one should abandon the principle of UN, but is UN really strong enough to make action, especially against aggressor nations? Because you look at the things which are happening currently, things which have happened in early 2000, and people thought the world have learned a lesson. People thought that they would have learned a lesson of, you know, invading other countries, and to say in the civilized world this is what we will do. And that the student of international law, actually this is a new case study. There is no case study that is similar to the case study of the prosecution of, you know, Nicolas Maduro. And let us look at ministry.
Ipapatso ya go rekisiwa ga mmu wa tlhakanelo re etsang banne ba mafelo a batho botlhe ba ba nnang mo gone mo Namibia. Seno ke kitsiso e botlhokwa thata go tswa lefapeng la temothuo ditlhapi metsi le tlhabollo ya mmu. Tswetswe reetsa ka kelotlhoko mme lo bolele ba lolapa la lona baagisanyi le ditsala ka molaetsa ona. Tlogela go reka gongwe go rekisa mmu wa morafe ka ntlha ya eng ka gonne mmu o leng wa batho botlhe ba Namibia ke mmu wa puso mme o ka se rekisiwe ka tsela epe. Go nna le seabe mo dipuisanong dipe tse di amanang go rekisa gongwe go reka ga o ka fa molaong gotlhelele. Molao wa Communal Land Reform Act, molao wa botlhano wa ngwaga tse di kidi tse pedi le bobedi, o thibela ditiro tse di ntseng jalo ka tlhamalano. Ditlamorago tsa ditherisano tse di seng ka fa molaong tsa lefatshe, dikotlhao tsa semolao. Ba ba tlolang molao ba ka duedisiwa madi kgotsa ba tsenngwa mo kgolegelong. Go kgoreletsa kutlwano ya setšhaba, go rekisa kgotsa go reka mmu wa setšhaba go ka baka dikgotlang tsa lefatshe le dikgotlang mo setšhabeng sa rona. Se o tlhokang go se dira, se o tlhokang go se itse, lefatshe la morafe ke la rona rotlhe. Ke thoto e abelanwang e tshwanetseng go sologela molemo mongwe le mongwe. Sireletsa boswa jwa rona ka go tlotla lefatshe la rona, ka go tlotla boswa lengwe ya rona le go sireletsa tikologo ya rona. Go bega ditiro tse di seng ka fa molaong. Fa e le gore o belaela gore go na le kgwebo e e seng ka fa molaong ya lefatshe, tsweetswe begela bolaodi jwa ditso lekgotla la mmu la bommasepala kgotsana ofisi ya lefapha e e gaufi le wena. A re direng mmogo go sireletsa lefatshe la rona le re le abelanang gore dikokomana tse di tlang di le dirise. Lefapha le ka se ikarabele mo tatlhegelong ya lefatshe ka ntlha ya go rekisiwa ga lefatshe la morafe go go seng ka fa molaong. Gakologelwa, lefatshe la morafe le botlhokwa fela thata. A re le bolokeleng le babalesegile ebile le sireletsegile mo go botlhe. Ke lebogela tirisano mmogo ya lona. Molaetsa wa radio o gasiwa go ya ka thuso ya madi go tswa pusong ya Namibia le Federal Republic of Germany go ya ka tirisano mmogo ya German Development Bank. Go bona tshedimosetso ka botlalo tsweetswe ikgolaganye le ofisi ya lefapha e gaufi le lefelo la lona kgotsa ofisi ya dikitsiso tsa setšhaba ya lefapha la temothuo ditlhapi metsi le tlhabololo ya lefatshe mo nomoreng ya 061 208 7604.
We are moving forward with a special edition of Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe, from the hour of 6 until 7:30. And apart from what is happening on an international platform, and as I indicated from 7 there, we are going to be joined by Gabriel Yambo. And I'm also waiting for Rikese Masiku, lecturer of international relations at the University of Namibia and political science too. Come and assist us on unpacking the situation of Nicolas Maduro, especially looking at the strength of institutions or multilateral institutions such as UN and the way forward. And I was indicating to say to the student of international law, even professors too of international law, the case study of Nicolas Maduro is a unique case study. And when it comes to international law, I don't know how they are going to do it, especially in the US, because you need a jurisdiction. And you are trying a president, and it's a sitting president. And you're also asking yourself to say, is the law enforcement of a country extend to that of another jurisdiction? What is the jurisdiction of operation of FBI, for example? What is the jurisdiction of operation of the police? And also, is it the president who is in charge of directing policing system or the law enforcement itself. And maybe also to look at the charge sheet too. And to say, is he going to be required to be represented? And what will happen to the wife too? Because the wife of Nicolas Maduro is also arrested. And my concern really, apart from ambiguity in terms of how law is going to take its course, I also have a question regarding the security of Venezuela, to say, how do you protect your president? No matter the situation, really, just a few hours. I know the U.S. have one of the sophisticated militaries on Earth. But really, just the head of state like that, just picking up. Why you have people who have been on FBI list for many years and they're not picked up? Or because it's a public figure, it's well known. Or was it an inside job? But this life and what have happened. And also to look at, because the very important thing that you need to look at is that whatever happened at the global forum, especially regarding powerful nations, the suffering will be felt here in Africa. The suffering will be felt here in Namibia, in Angola, in South Africa, and many other African countries. Because if you speak about Venezuela, a country which has, around 18% of global oil reserves, and is in this situation, the price of oil may change. The price of oil may change in the next 2 weeks or so. And it's also one of the shocks to the global economy. And if situation continue to be like this, maybe it's also a time to call for agency in terms of, self-sustainability of developing worlds. Because when big boys are fighting, when the elephants are fighting, it's a grass which is suffering, because we depend on the decision on a global scale. But in other countries, when situation get tough, they have their oil reserves. But what can we do to make sure that we reach that stage of saying whatever happened outside, it may affect us, but we can sustain ourselves too. During that period of time, can be able to sustain ourselves too during that period of time. And yeah, before we go to our guest, it's quite crucial to look at what is happening, especially with the African economy. It was stated that the International Monetary Fund forecast reveals that there is quite a positive outlook. Especially when it comes to the economic growth of African countries, especially when it comes to the economic growth of African countries, to say, the International Monetary Fund forecast revealed that the African continent will have high growth economies expanding by at least 6% in 2026. And I think this prediction continue to be consistent in it's coming to IMF prediction, especially looking at the other prediction of end of or the final quarter of 2025. Looking at 2026, we'll be able to see countries such as South Sudan, Guinea, each projected for double-digit growth powered by oil and mining booms. And you know, when African economy is growing, to say who is really the main shareholder in that cake, who is really the main shareholder in that cake? When you say African economy is growing, when you say countries such as South Sudan and Guinea, they have a projection of double-digit growth, when it's coming to oil and the mining booms. You know, who is in charge of oil and the mining industry in South Sudan? And what does that growth mean to an ordinary African person? And countries such as Uganda, Rwanda, Ethiopia, having a prediction of 7% growth in 2026. And however, the prediction also come with risk, because when an economist is predicting, is giving you what can happen if situation continue to be stable as that. But there is also shocks to the economy. There are issues of unpredictability in terms of the economy. There are factors that can limit countries to reach those good projection. And one of those factors is climate, political instability, and high debt. And if you don't have a very good formula on debt servicing, if you don't have a very good formula of debt servicing, even if your economy is growing, you will be forced to pay your debt. But if you have a debt servicing economic model, then it's easier for you to navigate through. And that is exactly what is happening. That is exactly what is happening. And and the prediction in terms of debt stated that African countries will pay nearly $95 billion to their creditors in 2026. And countries such as Kenya are dedicating the fifth of all government spending to debt repayment. And this thing of debts is really concerning. It's really concerning to say, am I really growing or I'm just in cycle? Am I really growing or I'm just in cycle? And was ever a country really advanced due to debts, acquiring of debts? Was ever country growth based on that? But it's a question of concern, and it's also a question of looking at Namibia. Looking at Namibia to say, after finishing repaying of your debt, of Eurobond, then you look again at African Development Bank to give you a loan and also other, fundings, to support your budget. And you're also asking yourself to say, is the money really directed to real projects which can be able to upgrade the economy and bring money within the country? And what is the long-term game plan, especially looking at 2026, looking at the operational budget and also developmental budget, and how are we going to find the balance? Because so far the operational budget exceed the developmental budget, to say money that is used in the operation is more than money that is invested in real development and what can be done moving forward. So let's look at the short commercial break, then we'll engage Gabriel Yambo, and hope also Mr. Simasiku will be able to join us, especially looking at the situation of Venezuela, and also the situation of the arrested president of Venezuela, where you see international cries, and Britain is saying we are not involved. And European Union president is against the work of the US. And you also find some of the quite you know, diplomatic statement, which is really concerning, because I was reading some of the reactions, especially from global leaders. Look at Germany saying, no, we are watching the development. We are watching the development. And one of the things which is quite a contradictory statement, because you see, Ukrainian foreign minister stated that Ukraine has consistently defended the right of nation to live freely, free of dictatorship and oppression and human rights violation. And the Maduro regime has violated all such principles in every respect. Now, if you take the case study of Ukraine and Russia, the case study of Venezuela and the US, put them on the scale, at the center of that discussion, undoubtedly, is the aspect of independence and sovereignty of the country, and the country of external interference. And interpretation of that case study may be similar, but when you look at the reactions of global leaders, you'll be able to realize that at the end of the day, it's a matter of who you are aligned to. It's a matter of who is your ally, and it's a matter of which narrative is being pushed to. And also, we may have the same case study, but it depends on who is aligning with who. Because another one may be looked at as an invader, and another person may also be looked at as a peacemaker. But if you are looking at the interpretation on an international jurisprudence, you'll be able to see that, you know, it's almost a similar case study to say there is no country under the UN Charter which is allowed to invade another country. That is the reason too that colonialism ended, and no one has a right to attack another country. And that was also central too in the formation of United Nations. And to ask also those who did, who dig deep into the research, to say, do we need United Nations reform? Is United Nations going to solve this problem, or is just going to be a matter of condemnation? And can United Nations also stand on its own, have a model to have its own funding system, and also its own response to situations, because it was supposed to be the highest multilateral institution? And is this proving those who form BRICS right to say they lack trust, or there is no more trust when it's coming to multilateral institutions such as United Nations? Or is it time now to reform United Nations in protecting the citizens of the world? So, because the world is bigger than anybody else, and institutions is what defining people from institution and law, was defining people from other animals. Otherwise, we'll be in anarchy, and we'll go back to the state of nature. So let's look at a short commercial break, then we'll look at the experts in the area to interpret such situations.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nore tatu natu bali o hatatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Yeah, we are moving forward with a special edition of Early Morning Scoop, and we are looking at the case study of Venezuela. Let's say, in the weekend, there's been a shocking news at an international platform, and most of the international relation analysts, political analysts, and those who follow global politics, they not sleep. They are watching to see what really happened. How come sitting president lifted or just captured within 3 hours lifted? And what does this mean to the future of the world and also the strength of international institutions? I'm in contact with Gabriel Liambo to help us unpack this situation and also to look at the strength of international multilateral institutions such as United Nations in solving this dispute. Gabriel Liambo, good morning and welcome to Early Morning Scoop. How are you?
Morning is good. How is the morning?
Oh, I'm and,
very good morning to the listener and Happy New Year.
I'm well, and the year has started with some of the shocking news, and I want you to give me just your interpretation of what have happened in Venezuela, especially in the weekend, and what we may expect, particularly from multilateral institutions such as UN, and moving forward.
It was a very tough one in the pricing. I think we are in for a wrong one. But the situation in Venezuela is simply about the oil business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Trump has been complaining that, you know, America is buying oil from Venezuela, and America owns Venezuela's oil. We have to observe and watch what's going to happen.
Mm.
Otherwise, it's a tragedy for international law.
Mm.
And we are just, for me myself, I'm speechless because what Trump did is simply the same as what Russia did. And now you are wondering, where is the UN? Where is the respect for international law?
Yeah. Now I'm shocked. Maybe before we go to United Nations, I want to look at the 3 hour operation. And I was also shocked to say, was Maduro not well protected? How can you just capture a president like you are capturing an ordinary David? What really happened, or is just the sophistication of the military apparatus of the U.S.? But what really happened, or was it an inside job? How come something like that have happened? A whole head of state, and Venezuela is not the smallest country.
Yeah, there's many factors.
Okay,
it's not that the American the Marines are mighty or anything.
Yeah.
You know, the same thing happened in Somalia. In Somalia, they were badly beaten.
Who?
By the Somali militia.
Okay.
They were badly beaten.
Okay.
And, you know, they made the movie about Black Hawk Down. They were beaten. And with what happened in Venezuela, simply Maduro was betrayed.
Oh.
They have a huge army for them, for a president to be snatched just like that.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm looking at helicopters flying freely in Caracas.
Mm.
When a normal guy with a mindset can strike the helicopter down. So what happened is, I think it's, the CIA has many operatives in Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
And but Maduro was betrayed. So it's not about the mighty, you know, of the U.S. or anything. Yes, they are powerful.
Yeah.
But what happened is Maduro was simply betrayed, and a lot of his security detail personnel were killed. And America was just flying freely without any challenge.
Mm-hmm.
The air defense was dismantled. Some didn't even fire. No, so it's really surprising.
It's like no gun was fired, and it was like what we see in movies. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's look at United Nations capacity. We have seen a lot of diplomats have spoken about. I've seen the EU European Union Commission President has also said no. Britain is saying we are not involved, and there are also those who are diplomatic also enough, not really getting involved into the case. But now let us look at, is the United Nations going to have a comeback? Are we going to have the strength of United Nations, or this will be the end of UN strength? Because look at the case of Libya, look at the case of Iraq, looking at the case of, even the case of Ukraine, the case of Palestine, and I'm always feeling pity, especially to the SG, who is really speaking good about peace and stability. But I think he looks like he does not really have that power. Well, what do you think will happen?
In my opinion, the UN is it's only for small states. Mm. So if you are Russia, if you are China, if you are the US, nothing will happen to you, and you can do what you want without any consequences. Maybe Russia, they can punish Russia, but as for the big powers, the UN is, if I may say, is useless. I mean, how can you abduct a democratically elected president?
Yeah.
And nothing happens. You know, we can condemn, you know, Spain has also condemned, you know, but in reality, if you don't have nuclear weapon, if you don't have a powerful army, if you are weak, you face the consequences of the superpowers. Mm-hmm. They can snatch your president at your wish. They can fight amongst themselves. And if you even try to take side, I pick Maduro because he thought maybe China or Russia will help.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know, the UN is just making statement, nothing will happen. So the UN can only come in when they want to deal with small power, small states that don't have a powerful army, that they don't have nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
So if you are Kim Jong-un with your nuclear weapon, you are guaranteed 120% that nothing will happen to your country. Mm-hmm. Anybody who tries to come to your border, they are done. Because you have nuclear weapon, you are protected. But if you depend on the U.S., on the U.N., your safety and that of your sovereignty of your state is not guaranteed. So,
Now let us look at the area that to say the war is a very expensive business, and there is always an economic part of it. How is the issue of aid really coming out clearly, and is this issue of oil going to impact us? Because I was looking here at the records, which is indicating that Venezuela has 18% of world total oil reserves, and it could be that there is an economic involvement within this conflict. Is going to impact us too here in Africa, this conflict, or we wait for the conflict to escalate?
We will be affected in somehow, I will say, a positive way, because America wants oil. It's not about drugs, not about anything. They want Venezuela's oil. So if they manage to get Venezuela's oil, so it means that America will control maybe 50 or 60% of the world oil output. Now this will put Russia and China in a very bad situation. Because China is getting cheap oil from Venezuela, and so America can wake up and say, now we are selling $50 per barrel for oil. So this one will now take out Russia out of business. Their economy will collapse, and they will face a lot of uncertainty, and China will lose their cheap oil supply. So it's all about oil. And us
Just hold on.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Eagle FM, let you express your constitution.
Let's move forward.
Yeah. So, we might, as in Southern Africa, we might end up getting cheap oil because the price of oil will drop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, with us, it might be positive or negative. But if America fails to take control of Venezuela's oil, and then the price will remain the same.
Mm.
But this is all about oil.
Okay.
And now
maybe the last question. There's always a saying to say oil is a blessing and a curse at the same time. We see countries with oil, they end up collapsing, but we have also seen the countries, especially in the Middle East, you see the Qatar, them, the United Arab Emirates, and many others who have used oil, it's called oil dollar, to build their countries from being a desert and to state of art and become global powers too. Now, looking at the case of Namibia, what do you think we need to do? Which case study we need to learn from too, to make sure that oil become a tool of development and not a tool of destruction? Looking ahead.
That one you have to tie your oil with your foreign policy, and you make sure that you don't upset the West. So as long as, for example, when you look at the Gulf and the Saudis, and then you look at their foreign policy, they don't contradict the Western powers. They do what the powers are saying. So they are reaping the benefit from the oil. I mean, if you look at Venezuela, American companies used to be in, Exxon, companies like Exxon, they used to control Venezuela's oil in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But still, poverty and other things were the story of the day.
Mm-hmm.
You have to align your policy with your foreign policy with the oil business and make sure that you are doing business only and not doing funny things. Otherwise, you will be sanctioned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gabriel Yambo, thank you very much for your input, and also thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much. We still have to wait.
Yeah.
America has not put foot in Venezuela yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see now that the VP who was sworn in, that how will they resist? Will there be a full blown out war, or they will settle it diplomatically?
No, I also have a question to say now. If you are playing a chess game and they capture your king, you are already, I don't want to say you are defeated, but you don't have ability to play anymore. maybe they will, but, it's quite really, a situation to look into. But anyway, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
All right, cool. That was Gabriel Yambo. And looking at the situation of Venezuela, to say you are playing a game of chess and the first move, they pick your king. If they could have picked the queen, but now this time they pick your king and your queen at the same time, how are you going to play? Because chess is already out. But let's see what will happen, because it also brought a lot of fear. It brought a lot of fear. And I don't know now what is happening within the circle in the US. Is this what they also expected? We just have to play along. And also to look at the laws which will be used in interpreting that case, to say you capture a head of state, a sitting head of state, and the wife, and see what will happen moving forward. Because it really brought a lot of fear and panic around global players and also states too. But you can also see that there are also those who are bold enough to say, you know, principles must not be abandoned. Even if you are weak, you must stand on principles, because that is what defines you from other people. So I will be joined shortly by Rick Masiku. He's a lecturer of international politics and their researcher, especially to look at that situation. But let's look at a very short commercial break, then we can move forward.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko berewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafelane Eagle FM di ae.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of...
Yeah, we are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop. As I indicated, I will be joined by Ricky Simasiku. Ricky is a lecturer of international politics and also a researcher within geopolitics and the areas of conflict and dispute resolutions, vested knowledge in global politics, and he's going to interpret to us also what happened in Venezuela, look at the security situation, and also look at the strength of UN. Ricky, good morning, and thank you for joining us at Early Morning Scoop. How are you doing?
Good morning, I'm okay. How are you?
Well. Yes, let us look at what have happened in Venezuela. What is your first interpretation when a sitting president was captured just within, 3 hours there by United States, and how is the security moving forward before we go to international institutions such as UN?
Okay, my first interpretation of what happened, like everybody else, I felt a kind of sadness that there seems to be no restraint as emphasized by international law through the UN Charter.
Yeah.
So, it was quite embarrassing to the international community to say, what the United States have done, capturing a sitting elected president, and of course, by unilateral action of the United States.
Mm.
And looking at what transpired, I can only conclude that there was collusion or a secret deal made by the United States and elements of the military regime of Venezuela, and of course
high-ranking officials.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these issues have come to make sense when you listen to what Donald Trump said when he said we are going to run Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
Saying we are going to run Venezuela means the United States has people in place.
Mm-hmm.
All we know now is that the United States have not put troops on the ground in Venezuela.
Mm.
So there must be people who are running the country for them, and this is the top officials in the Maduro regime. And, mm-hmm. and the other thing also very surprising enough is there was almost no fight by the Venezuelan military to stop the capture of the president. So all of these issues bring out a lot of mystery over what happened. But if you analyze deeper, you realize that the only possible way is through a secret deal between the elements of the Maduro government and the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else, I think, will unfold as time goes.
Mm-hmm. Now, let us look at United Nations, because every time there is a global conflict, we look at United Nations. Is this the test of the strength of United Nations, or the end of the strength of United Nations, especially in solving international disputes? Because I look at the SG pronunciation. This has been what he has been saying in the case of Ukraine. These are some of the things that he has been saying in the case of Palestine. Is the UN still an institution to save us, especially from aggressor nations?
The United Nations is a very relevant institution.
Mm.
Especially, let's look at the aspect of international law. Mm. International is regarded by many or others as weak.
Mm.
As weak in a sense that it takes a lot to enforce international law.
Mm-hmm.
The UN Charter, for example, I think it's Article 2, if I'm not mistaken, that speaks of sovereignty.
Yeah.
Despite speaking of sovereignty, the United States have entered another country, and then they've captured the president or the sitting president.
Mm-hmm.
So that speaks of how international law or the UN system itself is at the mercy of its member states. And unfortunately, the powerful states or the bigger states, such as the United States, Russia, China, especially those three, because they are the dominant powers in terms of economy and military for Russia. So those countries ought to do what they wish to do. And let me remind you to say, we live in a world in which big powers
mm-hmm.
operate on strategic interests,
mm-hmm.
security interests, that is, then geopolitics.
Mm.
So, I mean, the UN system cannot stop these states to acquire, achieve whatever they ought to achieve for their own national security or any other interest.
Mm-hmm.
So the United Nations as an institution is still a very relevant institution, but it has its own, limitations when it comes to restraining big powers.
Mm-hmm. Rico, while we are there, just hold on for a short commercial break, then we'll continue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Love, who's texting us?
Oh, it's the fam back home asking for things to bring with when we go.
Food supplies. Auntie needs her meds. Pick up a package.
That list is starting to sound long, plus the traveling costs. Take control with Express Credit and tick off your festive season wish list. Borrow 3,000 to 32,000 Namibian dollars. Repayable in 5 months. Same day approval. Visit expresscredit.com.na or call 081-9500-500.
The views.
Yeah, now let us look at the security, because, you know, and also maybe to look at what is that President Maduro has done. What mistake did he do? Because sometimes when you look at a person, when you look at the victim, we forget about maybe what is the thing that he did not do right. Let us look at the security. I was looking at, it took around 10 years to kill Osama bin Laden with all the sophisticated military of the US. And it took a bit of time to capture Saddam Hussein. But capturing a sitting president within 3 hours. It also says something also about the organization and also the security. Maybe what is, from a security point of view, what is that mistake that he has done? And also, what can we do to make sure that we protect citizen number one of any other country, especially those with bigger resources and influential resources too?
Okay, I would like to take you to the school of realism.
Yeah.
Perhaps the greatest philosopher in realism, Machiavelli, Niccolo Machiavelli, in some of his writings, he advises leaders to be very close to the
minister. Speak up a little bit.
Okay, I'm saying.
Yeah.
Machiavelli, Niccolo Machiavelli advises leaders to be close to the military, to form ties, good ties with the military.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can tell you is that this operation that led to the capture of Maduro would not have been possible if the military was 100% behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, there was almost no fight to stop the capture of the president. And I would like to believe he was, or he's usually very well protected.
Yeah.
The speed at which the United States took to capture Nicolas Maduro tells you that there was like a freeway open for the United States to capture him.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't think there was really a mistake, because there's nothing that the president would have done about this issue, especially what we have or what we are saying now, to say the military
mm-hmm.
have not done enough to protect the president. And the president's safety often depends on the military.
Mm-hmm.
If the military decides that they are going to withdraw support, we can say it's done. It's almost like a military coup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rex Masiku, maybe just your input, your final input, especially to this situation moving forward, especially where there is a talk about the oil economic involvement and their strategic interest. How should smaller nations deal with or manage their resources, not to be the case like any other countries, especially oil and the gas, not to be the case, but the blessing. Just 2 points before I give the mic.
First of all, from a security perspective, countries with oil resources need to be defended.
Mm-hmm.
With oil resources and other resources, need to invest in a strong security apparatus that's able to protect those resources.
Mm.
The other thing is, when you look at domestic politics, the citizens need to be content in some way to have what we call, as you have mentioned, the resource curse. And the resource curse, threats that come with it can be external. That's when our military should be strengthened, ensure that these threats are held not to cause chaos. And then the domestic part, once the citizens feel like they are benefiting from resources, you have almost resolved a potential problem coming from this resource case that we are talking about.
Yes.
So,
Rixi Masiku, we engage further on this, but for now, due to time, thank you for input and thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right. Yeah, that brings us to the end of our special edition of Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe, and Sir Helmut is here. And good morning, Chief.
Morning, David.
How are things?
All good.
What are you expecting today?
Let me just say, for now, I'm just glad I'm not in the room.
Okay.
Yeah, like if I was a president of any country, I'd be checking up on the American Empire.
Okay. Yes, see you around and wait for Hermut and to give you what is for you today. So for me, David Shombe, bye for now.